perfect, honey.
You say nobody's perfect.
I'm going to take back my... Yeah, but that's what the Bible says. But I said you're perfect. What do you think, everybody? Can we override that Bible and say that Lindy is perfect?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I heard a yes somewhere. Who said it? Lindy! So, anyhow, kids, this is the time when we have someone that shares their thoughts with us. And, you know, no one has all the answers, but it's so nice when we take the time to share our thoughts with each other. There's always more to learn, isn't there? There's always more to learn. And I got to spend a little bit of time with Bill back there this evening before we came in. He drove me over so I didn't have to drive. I just sat there in the lap of luxury of his beautiful car and rode over like a, you know, baby in a cradle. And spend time visiting with each other. It is such a treat. It's such a treat. Give each other time. It's one of the nice gifts that you can give each other. There, see? Look at that now. You learned. Huh? One of the nice gifts you can give each other is time. Sometimes I think we get so busy running around here in the world, so busy with making sure that we keep the table polished, I guess, that we just don't give enough time to each other. And it really is a treat. And so we have a gentleman that's going to share his thoughts with us this evening. He was, as a young man, he wanted to work for God. As a young man, he won and he went to college to study how to be a minister. He went to college to study. And then he stepped into the world. He's been using it. He's just using it. And he didn't go ahead and become that minister. I don't think he could have been, but not that I know of. I don't think he went on to that degree. But he got a lot of learning that I enjoy hearing his thoughts. And I know you will too. And that's our Dan Hare.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. My notes. I'm a little hard of seeing, so I might have to stop a little bit and do this kind of thing. Actually, tonight, I'm going to probably approach it a little bit differently. For those of you, I've been coming here, 14 years now? Long time.
Yes, you were just still in diapers, I think, for a
time. Yeah, I was going to say I'm still 39, but I was diapers, sure. It's all good. But usually I take a scripture and kind of unfold it from some of the learning that I had done. And tonight I'm just going to tell you a couple of stories. And I might bring some Bible verses if they come to mind. But life is really about the experiences that you have and how you respond to life. When things come up, how you respond to the circumstances and how you surrender to God is really how you get through things or how you don't get through things, or how you stress about things or how you somehow just have this deep inner peace. And it's been a kind of a whirlwind of a few months for me personally. My my mother, who's 81 years old, lives between Wyoming and Palm Desert. And her husband's 83, and he had beat prostate cancer for 18 years, and it came back. And so my heart's out to you. They came down from Wyoming Thanksgiving, and God, I didn't realize I was going to get all this emotion going. But virtually the day after our Thanksgiving dinner in Vista up in North County, they rushed him to the hospital, Eisenhower, which is in Palm Desert, where he was ultimately going to be treated. And the following week, they x-rayed him and did all that, and he's got stage 4 cancer, and it's all through his bones and liver. And Very, very difficult. You know, I've never been through that process where somebody passes from cancer. And, you know, the reality is we're all going to pass from this body and we're going to be in our spirit at some point. I was, there was a segment on one of the morning shows about the young lady who had just gotten married and discovered she had brain cancer. And she decided they moved to Oregon so she could die on her own terms. And she decided not to do chemotherapy because, you know, they said it might add another month or two, maybe more, but the odds are not great. And so she passed away, and her husband was going on with her legacy to make that legal in all 50-plus states. And so, you know, when my mom's been kind of an adventure, she's a tough cookie, just a tough cookie. She's about 5 foot tall. And, you know, we try to pamper her a little bit. And it's kind of funny because I say, now, mother, don't do this, and you tell us, and you don't, you know, don't overdo it. We're worried because you're a little lady. And I got about a 5-minute chew out with a whole bunch of cuss words, and that's not her style. What the? And it was kind of an amazing thing, and I said, I'm sorry, I'm just worried about you. But I went up there for Christmas for about, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 days. And we had to go back to the doctor because we put Lyle, my stepfather, on hospice, but something didn't get signed. So we had to go back to the doctor and go through this kind of this cancer mill. You know, where you go in and you sit and you've got a 3 o'clock appointment, and at 4:30 you're finally getting in to see the doctor for 10, 15 minutes and so on and so forth. And it was the decision to basically choose hospice as opposed to chemo. And I have real mixed emotions about our medical system. And I, you know, you can say this and you can say that. It's what it is. But it was either that or skilled care, because we were concerned that my mother could take it for so long. And, you know, my stepfather is kind of he's an old school guy. He comes from that era where barking out orders at everybody, and we're good with him. We kind of did verbal judo, you know, where you kind of just flow with it and you let him say his stuff, and then you repeat what it is so you make sure that he knows that you heard what he said and that you understand his feelings and stuff. But then you have to kind of transition him to another sort of a thought. And you know, it's the kind of thing now where he's probably sleeping 20 hours a day. So I tend to think we're kind of towards the end, but he didn't want to go. He just doesn't want to go. And this is maybe couple of weeks old information. And I remember we had the conversation, and he's really had no spiritual path. You know, he's just been kind of a fun guy, really fun. Would take your most sensitive point and you end up laughing about it. You want to just punch him, but you're laughing because he just does it in such a way. And he earned a real good reputation of being a smart, but people love him. And I had people calling me from Wyoming when they heard that he was ill to get to my mother, who doesn't really answer the phone and doesn't really know how to use one of these all that well, kind of thing. And, you know, it's a sad thing when you get to be that old and you're in diapers and you can't really even take care of yourself. And I remember I had a morning with him because my mom was out taking kind of a break with my sister, and literally like a baby, changing his diapers, and it wasn't fun. It was not fun, but it was kind of this thing of service. And, you know, here's this older guy who was my mother's husband, who had always been in control and always could bark out orders and, you know, was, you know, he was the man. And now he was this literally shrinking into this little baby. So sad. So he's on hospice right now. And I have a sense that the angels are kind of preparing. My mother's saying to me that he's all these conversations, you know, when he's sleeping, he's talking, and he's talking to people and whatnot. And I think they're preparing the way for him to transition. And we talked about this notion of dying. And it was, are you ready to die? Or I said, are you afraid to die? Oh, no, I'm not afraid to die. Okay, good. But what'd I do wrong? I said, you know, you're 83. You had a pretty good run. You got cancer. Your body's dying. But I said, remember this. Even though your body's dying, you're not going to die. You just leave, walk out of your house, and you get to go to this different place. And you get to see your brother who passed before you and your family. And you get to be really the volume of, this is what Millie says. It's so beautiful. It's the volume of love and goodwill that you created with people that stays with you. And that's kind of what you are in the universe, is the volume of your love. And he's kind of starting to get it, just kind of like this, okay, yeah, okay, yeah, got it. And you know, he's kind of thinking about this stuff, and really interesting experience. And so my sister's really been on the front line. She's just a saint. And I'll probably go back over here in the next week or two. But, you know, with all of our family, keep people in your prayers. And you know what? We all pass, whether it be today or whether it be in 100 years from now. And what we create in our soul and our spirit and what we project in terms of love. And it's not about book knowledge. I got tons of book knowledge, you guys. I got more book knowledge than I care to have sometimes. But like, I'm addicted. I'm a sponge. And I love new and innovative things. And I love to understand things in deeper depth and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's the love and the service that you create. And if you withhold love, it's like a dam or a river. And a dam kind of gets smelly because there's no life, there's no flow to it. And this idea that we are the vessels that God, he put in this body, this reservoir of life, that if we follow and seek God, everything else is going to just kind of unfold. And so as I approach my talk tonight, which I'm going to talk on something else, but it's maybe a good segue into it, is that love is not just saying things, it's doing things. And it's doing things that are kind of smelly sometimes. And I remember, you know, I'd never done this. I was almost throwing up because I'm, you know, changing this old man's diapers. It was just the saddest thing. But, you know, there's something that just drew me back, and I'd run out and I'd just almost heave and say, hold on, I'll be right back. And we got through it. And it was a great lesson, and it was a great lesson of humility for me. Because, you know, I'm a big macho guy, and, you know, I'm not, you know, like a mother that wipes the babies. You know what I mean? It was a really deeply humbling experience. I have a friend, and he's an old Baptist minister. He's kind of the antithesis of a Baptist minister. I don't think he likes Baptists because they talk a lot. And he does a lot for 50 years. He's 86 years old. And for 50 years, he's been serving the poorest of the poor in Tijuana, just across the border. And I mean, he's got more stories than you can shake a book at or shake a stick at. And I went down to see him over Christmas, and I took a friend down because we were going to give him a couple of bucks for some blankets and what have you. And I was pitching my friend who's in commercial real estate, and I said, yeah, come on down, because he's got some money. I said, you know, we're going to wring some money out of you, and my buddy. And I told him about Pastor Vaughn. And we went down, and he says, yeah, this guy is the real deal. And he doesn't talk. He doesn't preach. Very little of that. He serves. And his heart is for the fatherless boys in Tijuana and in those surrounding areas. And he says, you know, the sad thing is that these young boys, the majority of them are fatherless. They don't even know what a man is. I mean, and the ones that have fathers, not all of them, there's some good fathers down there, of course, but this is in the deepest set of, level of poverty where food, literally food, vegetables for soup that night may or may not be there. And for 50 years, he's been going down there. And he loves. And he serves. So here we are in our lives, and I always feel really humbled when I think about servants, because I'd rather be served. I really would. I would rather be served in certain ways. But yet, when I do serve, and when I find a need and that voice goes off in my brain and I'm able to do something for someone in a way that's very practical and very real, I get blessed. I get more out of it than I think they get out of it. So it's a blessing. I get to thank them for allowing to serve them. I think sometimes I find that when I don't... you know, the modern-day man, and you're, I'm just kind of feeling this way and kind of angst and not really fulfilled and whatnot. It's usually because I'm not serving. I'm not investing my life in something that is bigger than myself. I'm being lazy. I'm being selfish. And so, yeah, Pastor Vaughn. And I asked him, I said, how long are you going to be good for? Because he goes down to the toughest barrios in Tijuana. And I went down, I was going to do a documentary film on him, and I started, but the reality turned out to be that it just wasn't the right fit. And I got some footage, and it, as it turned out, an old white guy couldn't really get the access in that culture kind of thing. And I would go down there and... you know, gangs are really more of a social fabric of protection, and it's just a way that people unite and bond. And there's people that go down there that, I mean, they'd be robbed or killed, but Vaughn's been going for 50 years. And he says, you know, people know that I always have $300 or $400 on me, but not once have I been robbed. He said, in fact, the gangs down there kind of protect me. Most amazing, amazing thing. And he's got stories where, you know, a little baby dies and you got to buy the baby out of the morgue. And they don't care. It's all about money. And so he has to make tough, tough decisions all the time. But he serves. He serves. He puts himself out there. And so I'm very blessed to have people... like him as a model, like Millie as a model. And I was joking with Millie, I said, you know, how you doing? And the number of people that are 39 plus a few years, like Melly, the level of energy that they have is because they're engaged. And you engage them, which is pretty cool. They want to invest in you. We want to invest in you. So that's kind of a long preface. Sorry about that. I want to talk to you tonight about the idea of creating value, about encouraging other people. Last July, God, it's been a long time, I actually applied for my first job in 30 years. I've always run my own business or created my own income. But there was one job that I had in mind for the last 5 or 6 years that I was interested in, and it was the executive director of the Main Street Association, the Encinitas Main Street Association. And I just loved my little town. I live up by the beach, and I walk the streets, you know, 4 or 5 times a week and all the good stuff. So when I heard that the job was coming available, it wasn't public yet, and very bureaucratic. Here we are, almost February, and they're coming down to a decision. And so finally in October, early November, resume time was in. We thought they were going to interview in December, but they said, no, we're going to get to it in January. Okay, fine. So they went from 35 applications down to 10, then cut it down to 8. I made those cuts, and then it was cut down to 5, and I made it. And then there were 5 people that they were going to interview, and I interviewed last week. And the interview went well. I give myself an 8. It was so funny because, you know, it's a beach community and you dress like beachy. But I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. How do you dress to go to an interview in a beach community? How do you do that? And so I went through all these, you know, like you girls. Well, this will work and, you know, all these kind of different deals. And kind of the last minute of the last day, I decided, you know what? I have this really cool pinstripe suit. And actually, this shirt. I got it at Costco. And the interview was in the conference room at the law offices of one of the board members. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get dressed up. So I get my nice pinstripe suit, and I'm looking good. Nice Windsor knot, you know, the tie, the whole thing. And I walk, you know, I go in, and I sit down, and it was at 6 o'clock in the evening. And the thing that was so funny is the secretaries at the law firm, they're all in their gym clothes, and they say, hey, you know, we're sorry, we're going to go work out. Do you want some water while I waited? So that'd be great. Because I was actually a touch nervous. Feeling good, but a little nervous. I'd never interviewed with this kind of a thing. And I had actually spent a ton of time putting together this strategic plan, 3 to 5 years out, 10 years out, the whole thing. And it was very unique, very original thinking. And I get in there, I walk in the door, and Dave Peck, who's the principal at Coast Law, he recognized me, and we'd never met, but my picture was on the resume and, you know, that kind of thing. And he's in, like, this casual shirt, jeans, probably tennis shoes. And he says, hey, Dan, good to see you, man. He says, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to sit, but the vultures are in there. And so he walked me into this table, and there are about six on the committee. And they asked me some questions, and we went through it, and I felt pretty good about it. And the thing that was interesting is when I put so much time and effort into this, like, proposal kind of thing, because you're going to lead the organization kind of into a new chapter, and every leader, every executive director kind of has their own vision, and depending on the board and how much they want to micromanage you or not micromanage you, they're going to be interested, well, what are you going to do? And they actually asked me at one point, you know, we had problems in the past where they spent more money than on a particular event, and we have a limit that you have to get board approval on. It was $1,000, and I just says, you know, don't hire me. Don't select me. You need to micromanage me. And I said, let's agree on a budget. Let's look at where we want to go and so on and so forth. And I was real firm. And it actually, I got the good response. I said, this guy's, like, got it going on. So I'm feeling real strong, right? I'm feeling really good. Went through the interview, so on and so forth. And a friend of mine, acquaintance friend, is the guy, the president of Spy Sunglasses, a brand up in North County. And I was telling him, I saw him at the street fair, and he said, "Are you going to give them all that information?" He says, "What if they steal it from you? What if they take your ideas?" And I thought, and I had thought about it. I said, "It's on them." Because if I wasn't going to get the job, I hope they use my ideas at least. It just means that God had a different plan for me, and I got to give some input for perhaps what they might do. And it was kind of interesting because some of the ideas and principles and programs that I had suggested, and I put my resume in November, I think, in the next 2 months, I'm noticing it in their newsletter. My ideas. It was kind of interesting. And I thought, well, okay, I figure as much. And so I found out just a couple of nights ago that there are five finalists, and there's one leader, and it's not me. I think I'm number two. I'm not sure, but I think I'm number two. And so I'm kind of like, you know, the horse race where you're going around the final edge, and you're kicking it, go, go, go. So I'm doing this last-minute lobbying and whatnot. But I've never done this before. I've never answered to anybody in that way before. It's just been this really kind of both humbling but understanding that you do work at the pleasure of this board of directors. And I don't know what's going to happen. Good chance I might not get this job that I really wanted, but then there's a chance that I might get it. And then there's a chance that they might create a whole other division of doing one of the elements of my plan. But my point is, you know, I wanted to create value for this group. And it's my own hometown. It's where I've lived for a long, long time. My grandparents moved there in the 40s. And, you know, I just keep thinking to myself, okay, do good. Just do good. You know, Jesus said, "Hey, do good to those who do evil to you, to those that are people that are not nice to you. Do good. Take a deep breath, breathe in love, and do good." You know, the Apostle Paul talks about in his epistle, his letter to the Ephesians. He says, you know, encourage one another. Extol, build up one another. And he makes this incredible, it's one of the neatest verses in the Bible, I think. I think they're all pretty cool, but it's really clear, and I love the word picture. It says, "Let no unwholesome word come out of your mouth, except that word which is good for edification." And that word basically means building. And every word that we speak is a building block to the people we speak it to. Sometimes you got to kick some tail and say, "Hey, look," and you got to confront. And it's not about being ooey gooey gushy, but it's about how do you build into other people's lives to build them up. It's like you're, you know, it says the wounds of a friend are better than the kisses of an enemy. In other words, if your friend says, "Hey, look, you're blowing it. You're not seeing this thing right. You know, look at this thing. I want you to look at it." That's kind of the same. The love is the same thing if you say, "Hey, you know, you did really good and I'm praying for you." But it's what is it that that person needs to build them up? And I remember the example that I love so much. Walking down the streets of Rome, and there's these bricklayers. There's this city block, got its long, big, big area. And one of the masons, you say, "Hey, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm laying these bricks." Okay. Not real happy. Just kind of, not real peppy. Just kind of do it. Says, "Okay." Walks down the street. Sees another bricklayer. He says, "Hey, what are you doing?" And that guy's all whistling and happy, and he says, "I am building the Sistine Chapel, brick by brick, what I'm doing is important. It might be mundane, it might be difficult work, but it's really important because the finished result is magnificent. And so I want to encourage all of you, or share that kind of because it's going through my world. I had an incident recently where somebody apparently said something that offended him or hurt him, or I was rude, or I didn't know it. I didn't even know I did it. And I got a mouthful of it. And the voice in my head said, just don't say anything. Just listen. You know, soft answer turns away wrath. Just listen. Just kind of, because obviously they're going through something, and it's really not about me. It's something they're going through. And so as you look at people that you meet, realize that it's kind of a divine appointment. And encourage those people. You know, a few weeks ago, it was so touching to me. I have a friend from a very long time ago, and she came up to me and she said, I was in this meditation, and she said, I guess it was a yoga thing, or a burning bowl, or a sound deal, and kind of the question was, think of somebody that had made a difference in your life. And she says, I thought of you. And I almost started crying. I said, really? And I have a warm and close, but not a frequent relationship with this person. And I thought, thank you. That really, really feels good that I've had this effect somehow in this person's life. And so tell people, thank you. If they meant something to you. And love like a river, not like a dam. And when you get drained and you don't have any more love to give, stop, meditate, pray, get quiet so God can fill you back up. He can fill your heart back up. I think it's Charlene who teaches me how to meditate and pray and who has such a strong and beautiful way to connect with the divine. And, you know, I'm kind of this ADD, always rushing around, you know, racing around, and Charlene just can go, oh, and you just feel this frequency out of her. So thank you. I thank you. Very, very influential, yes. You build many bricks in my house, as they say. And I want to close with a quote from Mother Teresa, and this is where I have to get my glasses because I'm only 39 and my eyes are not so good. Okay. Mother Teresa says, let's see here. Here we go. She says, if you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish ulterior motives, but be kind anyway. If you're successful, you will win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. What you spend years building, someone else could destroy overnight. But build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous of you. Be happy anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. But you know what? Give your best anyway. Thank you.